Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday, home of the World Series champion, Dodgers. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. It is so great to have you in here today. Los Angeles, Lakers a title, Dodgers a title. Why get out of bed for second place? It's unbelievable, the entertainment capital of the world. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm great. Congrats to Dodgers fans.
That was amazing.
Lots of Dodgers fans.
They've lit. This was not like the Lakers where you go out and get LeBron AD and win. Dodger fans have lived through this for 7 years. This is their, what, third trip to the World Series in 4 years?
They've been very patient. They deserve it. They were a great team. Mookie was spectacular. It was a great World Series.
So let's start with this. The big story, of course, is the Rays pitcher, Blake Snell. He's their ace. He is great. He is just mowing everybody down. And they pull him in the sixth and put in a reliever who had been struggling. This, of course, is called analytics. The numbers say Mookie Betts was coming up, and you don't want him to have to face Mookie Betts a third time. Oh, boy. I get analytics for a regular season. I have always questioned analytics for postseason, NBA, baseball. As a consumer, when you watch that game last night in the World Series, does it feel different than a regular season baseball game? Oh, it does. There's more drama, more pressure and intensity. That's because it also feels different for the athlete. I parent one way 99% of the time. I let my kids make mistakes. But dad parents differently. The 1% were in crisis. Dad takes over. I read books on how to parent. They inform me. They don't own me. They don't control me. Analytics are great information. But they value long-term data, not short-term reality. Okay, Blake Snell is a great American athlete. Nick Anderson is an average relief pitcher. And in America, we write sports books about Jeter and LeBron and Michael and the late Kobe and Shaq. And we write them about Ted Williams and Babe Ruth. We write them about Brady and Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. And what do all those have in common? They are great athletes who rise to the level, even in later years, to shock us. We do not write sports books about average professional athletes hoping in the moment they finally deliver against Mookie Betts. That's not what we write books about. We write them about the legends, LeBron and Brady, who in that last hurrah win another title. You don't take Blake Snell out there. It's one thing to be guided by analytics. It's another to be controlled by them. If you don't think that sucked the energy out of the Rays and empowered the Dodgers, here's the manager, Dave Roberts, his reaction after the game when the Rays took out their ace.
I was pretty happy because he was dominating us and we just weren't seeing him. So, you know, once Austin got that hit, then they went to the pen. I think that Mookie looked at me with a little smile and we were just all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game.
I mean, hello. Again, I want in the biggest moments, this is not a regular season game, game 28, 36, 42. Okay, this is the moment. There's a guidebook for pilots on how to land a plane. When the engine goes out, Sully Sullenberger, the guidebook doesn't matter. You land it, whatever it takes. And in that moment, you get to game six of the series, you face Mookie Betts, the analytic book doesn't matter. The last two NBA seasons, the three players that have led teams to championship, LeBron, AD, and Kawhi Leonard. The Lakers believe in the three-point shot. So did Toronto. But in the finals, in the moment of clarity to win it, the Raptors and the Lakers get a stop and get a basket. The analytic three-ball guidebook is out the window. It's great to get you places, long-term data, but short-term reality is AD, we're going to feed it to you down low three straight times. We'll take three buckets, 6 points, instead of three shots, potentially nine, but in this moment against that defense in the NBA Finals where there's more intensity, drama, expectations, and tightness, you may not have your best shot. Again, I want all the information. It's not going to control me. Here's Cody Bellinger when Blake Snell was pulled out, a player of the Dodgers, what he thought.
Yeah, I was shocked. We were kind of joking around. We were like, all right, way to get him out of there in the sixth like we planned. But not like that. But, yeah, and then we just kind of got we rallied from there. And Snell had his stuff today. He was gross. I would say that it uplifted us.
Championships should be won by stars and players, not managers and guidebooks. By the way, the funny thing about analytics is it's always about the pitcher. Baseball people will tell you Mookie Betts, a great player, a right-hander, actually can't hit lefties. He didn't have a home run all year against lefties. If you really want to go deep into analytics, Blake Snell was perfect for Mookie Betts. He has struggled all year as a right-handed batter to hit left-handers. All right, let's start. Now, people throw stuff out all the time. Your team's average or bad, and we're getting close to the NFL trading deadline. And when I used to do local radio, and I worked in Portland, I had only one rule. You could not call my show and just come up with a trade and then say, I'll take your answer off the air. You can't just call my show and go, okay, I want LeBron James, and I'll give you a bench player. I'll take your answer off the air. So I started banning that call. No trade suggestions. But occasionally you will see a trade suggestion and go, oh, wow, that makes perfect sense. Here's one on the interweb, Pro Football Talk. Would the Cowboys trade Amari Cooper, wide receiver? I would tomorrow, and I've got a team, the Green Bay Packers. Does Green Bay, ask yourself, what is the standard of Green Bay? I would say it's Super Bowls. This is a franchise that aims for Super Bowls. Do they want to win one? Okay. We saw them play Tampa. Can they beat Tampa with this current roster? No, they cannot. They cannot beat Tampa with this current roster. Amari Cooper is a need. And by the way, he's expensive, but you can get out of the contract after next year. Look at the arms race currently happening just in the NFC. Tampa Bay now with Antonio Brown has three number one receivers. Seattle has Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. They've got two number one receivers. The Rams have 3 to 4 very competent receivers. The Saints have Alvin Kamara, who's half receiver, half back, Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. By the way, Arizona now has won 7 of 10. Christian Kirk, D-Hop, Kyler Murray's a weapon. And you're going to go with Devontae Adams, who gets hurt fairly regularly, and a bunch of guys who are 2 and 3 receivers. And if you got to the Super Bowl, Kansas City and Pittsburgh are loaded with weapons. The NFL rules are changing. They're changing. This is not 1985 football. God, it's not 2015 football. It is all about offense. Green Bay has to admit, this is hard for general managers to do, they butchered their number 2 pick in the draft. They needed a receiver. They got stubborn. They chose a running back who is now number 3 on their depth chart. He was number 4 before the season started. This is a perfect deal. Dallas needs picks. Dallas needs to rebuild. They need picks. They don't need wide receivers. Green Bay doesn't need picks. You got 2 more, 3 more elite years with Aaron Rodgers. You need weapons for Aaron. You don't need developing players. You just need more weapons. Same situation Tampa's in. That's why they're getting Antonio Brown. You can't just sit and wait and develop people. Get Brady stars now. Get Aaron stars now. Dallas, once again, You are in a rebuild, whether you want to admit it or not. Amari Cooper, with the emergence of CeeDee Lamb and young Michael Gallup, makes complete sense. Green Bay, you pay a little, you don't love free agents. This guy, this personality, his work ethic, his ability to get open is perfect for the Packers, and I think changes how everybody around the league would view them.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So we just do this all the time, and we see it all the time. We want to bury stars. We're great in America building up stars, and then we want to tear them down before they're ready to be torn down. We do this with LeBron. We nitpick. And he's not the same player he was 7 years ago, but he still has so many advantages over everybody else, and we're doing it now with Tom Brady. I just looked at Pro Football Focus. The three highest-rated quarterbacks in the NFL are Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady. But, Colin, LeBron's way more athletic. That's never been why Brady wins. LeBron and Brady are much more similar than dissimilar at this point in their careers. LeBron can no longer give you 45 minutes a night and guard the best player for 45 minutes, and Tom Brady can no longer take 7, 8, and 9 hits. Okay, LeBron James needs the right piece to win a title, and Tom needs the right weapons to drive the ball down the field. But they have much more in common than you think. A, they're both innate leaders. They're business leaders. It is innate. LeBron has been built to lead social movements, basketball movements, businesses. Brady, similarly. They understand how to play with stars. Not everybody does. Big Ben can struggle with that. Westbrook can struggle with that. They get how to play with stars. Number three, they're more committed than even other committed athletes. They also get the most emotionally out of teammates. I mean, AD was one of those guys that never played through injuries. Wasn't hurt much this year. And finally, they see the game. They don't just play it. LeBron's not playing basketball. He's seeing it, coaching it, and playing it. They also, LeBron moves west. And for years, we bragged about how great the West was in the NBA. And then LeBron moves out there, and a year and a half in, we're like, well, you know, the West has a lot of good teams, but they don't have any great ones. Oh, LeBron's team's the best. And Brady moves to the NFC, and for years we talked about how deep the NFC is. And by week 7, we're like, yeah, Seattle and Green Bay are good teams, but Tampa Bay appears to be head and shoulders better. Oh, by the way, LeBron leaves teams, they disintegrate. They're not just bad, they disintegrate. Even the well-run teams, like Miami. Brady leaves New England, a well-run organization. 7 games later, they're disintegrating. They're very similar. Ask yourself a question. Is Tom Brady as good as Jimmy Garoppolo? I'd say yes, way better. Garoppolo was in last year's Super Bowl. Is he better than Jared Goff? He was in the year before Super Bowl. Is he better than Matt Ryan? He got to a Super Bowl 3 years ago. Tom and LeBron can't do everything they could 7 years ago. But their passion, their commitment, their intelligence, their innate leadership, their efficiency, their understanding how to elevate others, there's nothing else out there like it in the NBA or the NFL.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Can't imagine living in a city like New York where everybody's in last place. In Los Angeles, folks, we do not get out of bed if you cannot promise us a conference championship. Our teams win on Monday night. They win last night. They win championships. I am so smug this morning. It feels just great to be. They're renaming it to Winner's City. That's what they're naming it. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, Nick Wright. His teams aren't doing great. That has no reason to rub it in and be a
well,
nut.
Well, that's Colin.
Yeah.
Colin, I mean, if that's true, so you still have not gotten out of bed for your beloved Clippers. Because they haven't made a conference championship game ever.
Whatever.
So, I mean, do they count? I don't know. Are they like the Orange County Clippers? I'm not sure the geography of the area. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, I've said this before. Analytics, it's like parenting. I read books on parenting. They inform me. They don't control me. Analytics inform me. They shouldn't control me. I watched the analytics control the Rays last night, pulling out Blake Snell. And I think, like America, I thought, I don't understand it. I don't get it. What did you make of the moment?
So this is so multi-layered, and I find it so fascinating. at the very base level in sports, all managers and coaches, and we've said this before, before you make any major decision, your final question should be, like before you leave the house, did I leave the stove on? The final question should be, is this what my opponent is praying I do? And if the answer to that question is yes, then don't do it. You knew the Dodgers wanted him out, and you took him out anyway. But I think it's deeper on an analytical level than you even went to. Because the defense of this is, well, he didn't go six innings all year. All year long, this is what we did. We never let him see a third time through the lineup. Got it. Understood. And that might be the flaw. And by that, I mean this. I'm going to use a cross-sport example. Giannis Antetokounmpo this year won the NBA MVP in part because he did all 30 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists in 30 minutes per game. Colin, he was only playing 30 minutes per game. And some of us, while loving Giannis, said, you know, that could be actually a problem. Because in the postseason, he's going to have to play 40 minutes a game. And if you're not ramping him up for that, if you are not preparing him for that, you might not be preparing your team best for postseason success. And what happened with the very analytically inclined Bucks? Mike Budenholzer said 36 minutes is the ceiling for those guys because that's how they run their team.
Right.
The Rays are very smart. The Rays got further than they should have. Analytics has helped them massively get to where they are. But if all year long you are building a team out to not be able to handle the biggest moments of your year, then what are you doing? So the flaw might not have just been last night. It might have been Blake Snell's third start when, you know what? Let him get knocked around a bit and see if he can figure out how to attack a guy a third time through the lineup because you're going to need him to do that in October.
Yeah, I think it's really well put. And both you and I, I've said this about the Houston Rockets, I like analytics. But when you get to the postseason, Kawhi Leonard gets me a bucket or a stop. LeBron's, you know, how do you analytically measure LeBron's intelligence with 4 minutes to go in a season?
Well,
you know?
Well, that's the same thing. It's this Nate Silver, who I really like. If you follow his basketball model, if you're a gambler, during the regular season, you could legitimately make a lot of money just following Nate Silver's basketball model. In the postseason, it is worse than a drunk guy on the subway because they haven't figured out. Three of the last 4 years, he has had LeBron's team an underdog in round two of the playoffs because they can't account for how drastically different postseason basketball is from regular season basketball. I think you saw this in the NFL last year. Colin, everyone liked the Ravens last year. But the really smart analytics folks were presenting us with numbers saying this is one of the five greatest teams in the history of the sport. And I think a lot of us were like, well, that seems to be a bit much. Like, do I really trust them if they get down a touchdown in the postseason? So there is not a secret sauce here. It has to be some science, some art. And I think someone put it really well last night. I wish I gave him credit. I can't remember who it was. You are an idiot in 2020. If you ignore analytics entirely. But you might be as much of an idiot if you totally ignore the human factor and the art and the feel of these games as well.
So, you know, I said this. We always look at the dissimilar with LeBron and Brady. We know Tom is not the athlete of LeBron, but LeBron's intelligence and innate leadership has always been undervalued, and Brady's never won because of athleticism. They both share a very high IQ, pre-snap, sure, big situational. They're beyond committed. They elevate others, very secure in themselves when it comes to giving the stars the ball or the shot. And I look at Brady today, and when LeBron came to the West, the knock was, well, the West is just too good. And then about an hour later, you're like, yeah, it's got a bunch of good teams, but it doesn't have a great team. And Brady goes to the NFC, and you watch Seattle and you watch Green Bay, and like 7 weeks later, you're like, oh, wait, NFC's got a bunch of good teams. They don't have a Kansas City. It doesn't appear to be even be outside of Tampa, a Tennessee. And I look this morning, and I think, Tom Brady's going to end up in the Super Bowl. He's the third highest graded quarterback today. That stings for you, does it not? A little.
Okay, there we go. We got there eventually. All right. So LeBron and Brady do have some similarities. They also have some drastic differences. I would argue maybe the biggest is LeBron's circle, his friend group, is at least to my eye one I'd much rather hang out with than the folks Brady hangs out with. But that's a different story entirely. Listen, man, I'm just going to have to let you marinate in this moment. Right now, in October 28th of 2020, your lifelong love affair with Thomas Edward Patrick Brady,
yeah,
not only does it seem to be as strong as ever, but it seems to have, you know, reached new heights. The Bucs are coming off back-to-back dominant victories. Brady has played back-to-back excellent games. He has managed to go 8 consecutive quarters without forgetting a down. He's not yelling at people. It's all great. And so I just have to let you have this moment. Now, do I think they're better than Seattle? No. By the end of the year, do I think they'll be better than Green Bay? No. Am I convinced they're going to win their division? I'm not. But right now, this moment, he absolutely wins the title belt of most surprising story to me of the 2020 NFL season.
Yeah.
And I've just got to let you have it. So I'm not giving much, but I'll give you that. I'm not putting him in the Super Bowl yet, but right now, this does appear to be at the moment one of the rare debates you and I have had where you have the upper hand. I can concede that.
That's the greatest moment in the history of the show right there. Finally, it would be easy to blame Baker Mayfield because OBJ never worked. It would be easy to blame OBJ because it never worked. I'm going to blame Stefanski and the GM. If you watch data and you watched Baker Mayfield in college, when he sprinkles it around, he's actually very good. And when he gets hurt against Cincinnati and sprinkles it around this week, best game he's ever played. His best year in Cleveland, not with the best coach, his best year was OBJ wasn't there. This chemistry is virtually impossible to create. It is so difficult. OBJ should have been traded before the season. When you went out and got Austin Hooper, you had two tight ends, a star receiver, two backs. This deal should have been made when relationships don't work. The data tells you it doesn't. You always move sooner than later. OBJ has a history of getting dinged up. This is not on Baker. It's not his fault that a superstar comes into a dysfunctional organization and he just naturally feels he's got to get him the football. I would, you would, anybody would if OBJ walked into town. This is on the management of the Browns that didn't see it earlier, move him earlier. How is that for supporting Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to support him. The other way would be, you know, in the final three quarters this weekend, he was 22 of 23, 300 yards, 5 touchdowns, 3 fourth quarter go-ahead touchdowns, and threw an absolutely 10 out of 10 perfect pass to win the game. But it was against the Bengals, so I don't think those count in your official statistical ledger.
They
but
don't.
I'll have to check. I know they don't. It's like, hey, these games against the divisional rival don't count because he's awesome in them. I think Odell's a great player. I feel terribly for him that he just got hurt again. I do think you are correct in this. Just because a guy is a great player does not mean it is the best use of resources given how a team is built. And I think Baker is better off potentially with, to use a $2 word, I guess, more of an egalitarian offense where everyone gets equal distribution of touches rather than one where you've got to force feed a certain star of the ball. With that said, the Browns are going to be in the playoffs, much to your chagrin. And in the playoffs, they are going to play a team that's better than them, like the Steelers, like the Ravens. In a game like that, the way you win that game is Myles Garrett on the defensive side makes a couple great plays, and your superstar on the offensive side, Odell Beckham, makes a couple great plays like he did against Dallas. That's now removed. So I do think this hurts them against the very best teams. But I also think they probably are better served trading Odell this offseason to a place such as Green Bay, where his talents can be best utilized and where they can maybe use those resources elsewhere in Cleveland.
You know what? I'm going to stop it right there because I was right a bunch, and that's happened so infrequently with you and I that I feel like I was on the right. You know, it's just like
you were so, right a bunch. I mean, Baker was pretty good. Baker was pretty good this weekend. Meanwhile, I do believe that your beloved godson, Sam Darnold, might be shopping real estate. But, you know, who am I to bring that up here? It's not his fault the Jets are the worst team I've ever seen. Hey, quarterback, what impact can a quarterback have in this league? It's not like he's the left guard. I mean, come on.
Nick Wright, first things first. Good seeing you, buddy.
See you, pal.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Here's some good news for the Cowboys. They traded defensive end Everson Griffin to the Detroit Lions. This is what the Cowboys need to do. They are rebuilding. They just don't want to admit it. This is a sign that they went and got a conditional six-round pick. It's not a great pick, but at this point, Griffin's not a great player. But he can help Detroit situational and a pass rush. It's interesting about this, and I've talked about it a lot this week, is that if you look at the NFL every year, and this is the kind of stuff I sit on and look at the internet all day, and I have for years, there's always one quarter of the league, about eight teams, that I think are in Super Bowl bubble. They have a chance. They may not be perfect. They need a break or two. And then I always feel the exact same number of teams, eight teams, are rebuilding. And between that's 16 teams, that's half the league. The other half of the league is just okay, average, or slightly below average. But there's usually eight teams that should be favored and could win the Super Bowl if they stay healthy and maybe get a break. You know, Baltimore gets a break and Kansas City gets knocked out. They don't match up particularly well. And there's eight teams that are rebuilding. The key is the teams at the top usually know they're good because you're beating everybody. The teams at the bottom sometimes think they're better than they are, and they don't go into a rebuild. Dallas moving Everson Griffin and the Amari Cooper rumor, and it looks like Dallas now is starting to figure out we're bad. This is a great place for the Cowboys. So I always do a Super Bowl bubble, and these are the eight teams this morning that I feel are in the Super Bowl bubble. Green Bay, Seattle, Tampa, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Tennessee, Baltimore, and the Rams, with the Niners and the Saints close. Now you say, why the Rams? Well, let's be honest. They're a bad call from right now 7-1, or is it 6-1 or 7-1, that bad call in Buffalo. And by the way, the Bears are a very good football team. They pushed them all over the field. And there's something in the water in Los Angeles. All we do is win championships. I think the Niners on any given day are better than the Rams. They proved it 2 weeks ago, but they are falling apart physically, so I put them outside. And the Saints, same. I worry about Michael Thomas, the situation there. But I want to introduce a second bubble. I'm going to call it Collins Rebuilding Rubble. And I believe these are the eight rebuilding teams in the NFL. Washington, Miami, Jets, Giants, Bengals. Atlanta is, they just fired everybody in the front office, the Jags and the Dallas Cowboys. And Atlanta, with Matt Ryan, won't feel like one, but where don't they need help? And that's what I'll say about Dallas. Outside of wide receiver, where they have so many good players, they could actually trade one. And then running back, where they don't have the depth to trade anybody, but they've got two guys I really like. Where don't they need help? They need a more dynamic tight end. Both offensive and defensive lines need to be rebuilt. The secondary needs to be rebuilt. They could use another linebacker. So I think Dallas is in the bottom eight. Now, Atlanta and Dallas may not feel like rebuilds. Some people would say Detroit, but Detroit's got a veteran quarterback. They're 3-3. The wild card is wide open in that division, and they're making moves to bring players in. So they feel they're close. They feel they're close. And I think that's kind of where we are this morning. So I want to bring up this as well. That the Patriots are 2-4 right now. And a question has been asked, are they buyers and sellers at the trading deadline? This is very interesting. Are they buyers and sellers? Now, you know my position has been they had eight players opt out. They didn't re-sign free agents. I said, I think they want one of these three young quarterbacks. They're not tanking because nobody does that in the NFL, even Jacksonville. What they're doing is restructuring. Bill Belichick says, you know, take care of your family. It's about family, opt out. Now there's trade discussions on Stephon Gilmore, their best player. They're not giving Cam any weapons, their second best player. So take a look at the top 11 picks. This article says, are they buyers or sellers? So let's eliminate the teams that I don't think will take a quarterback. The New York Giants are not going to take a quarterback. They're not going to trade Daniel Jones for Justin Fields. And they're too good to end up number one. Atlanta, Miami with Tua, Cincinnati, Dallas, Dak, and the Chargers. So those teams. So here's what is left. The Jets, the Jags, the Vikings, Washington, and New England for those top three quarterbacks. So let's just give the Jets Trevor Lawrence. They're awful. I don't see wins on their schedule. They get Trevor Lawrence. That means two elite quarterbacks left. If you look, Washington believes this morning it can win a division. That locker room is all in. They'll get a player, not trade one. And I think Minnesota is still way too talented to not win another 3 to 4 games. If you look at the Patriots' schedule, it is shockingly difficult. I believe they'll beat the Jets twice, making them a 4-win team. At Buffalo, Baltimore, at Houston, Arizona, at the Chargers, at the Rams, at Miami, Buffalo. Trade Stephon Gilmore, move out Elliman, they lose all those games. New England is what I believe the opt-outs, the not signing free agents, letting guys go. I believe it's all part of a very subtle Belichickian reboot. You look at their schedule, the Chargers, Herbert's way better than we thought. Miami, way better than we thought. Houston's not as good, but they're a lot better than New England. So I look at this, people asking, are they buyers or sellers? I think New England's going to be a seller. I believe they started the season knowing they're a seller. When I see Stephon Gilmore, and I'm not saying it's not the right thing. I think it is. The free agent market's going to be what for quarterbacks? Re-signing Cam? What is it going to be? Jimmy Garoppolo in a trade? I don't know. I think it's very obvious. I think they've been doing it since the season started. I heard all this stuff about Belichick would never, ever tank. Belichick knows he's won 43% of his games without Brady. He's got to go find the next Brady. And it's not on the free agent market. So I think they're sellers. I think they'll move somebody in the next few days. And as Joy said, the Seahawks just now picked up Carlos Dunlap. There's a lot of buyers on this market. Green Bay, Seattle, Baltimore. There's also a lot of sellers.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Brock Huard's my friend. He's been working at Fox Sports now for a little over a year. We put him on NFL games now, in which he is unbelievable. One of the smartest guys that does football analysis work for any network. He's now ours, and we love that. Brock Huard, NFL player for 6 years, joining me. Back up to Peyton Manning with the Colts, which I don't think I've ever said that. I think I knew that, but I just saw that in a piece of paper. So let me ask you this. You, as a former Seattle guy, we're both Seattle guys. I've been saying this, that Russell Wilson feels like a life preserver sometimes on a sinking roster. They got him Carlos Dunlap this morning. I think that's big. I like Pete Carroll, and I like the GM, John Snyder. But I watch Monday, and I say to myself, it's too Russell Wilson-centric. Is that, as a former NFL quarterback, do you see some of that?
Well, you say that, Colin, because the Seahawks are dead last on defense. I'll say that again. The Seahawks are dead last and giving up over 50 yards more than the second worst defense in the league that I've called twice, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. So you can have a middle of the pack defense, but you also need a defense. At least they're giving them takeaways, Colin. That is one thing they are doing. They are giving him some extra possessions. But that defense did not hit Kyler Murray one time. They did not hit Kyler Murray one time on Sunday night. That can't happen. And this is a defense, let's remember, that Pete Carroll continues to have invested in. Draft capital, Jamal Adams, two future first-round picks. Like, this is a group defensively that they have committed to that should not be this bad. So, yes, there is too much on Russ. If he's got to throw it 40 or 50 times, and the people love it because he's cooking all over the place, but you're not going to win a world championship. He'll have the biggest numbers he'll ever had. He may have the most individual glory, But to win a title, to win that division, they have to be more balanced as a football team.
There's a rumor out today, Zach Ertz to the Packers potentially. They've made calls. We've heard rumors about Amari Cooper to the Green Bay Packers. What I think sometimes fans forget, you can bring certain players on, like a corner, and they can pick up a system very quickly. But quarterbacks, there's a reason in the summer they invite their receivers and tight ends out to their town because it's all about timing. How long would it take Aaron Rodgers and a veteran Zach Ertz or Amari Cooper that you literally think that Aaron would throw them open, would trust them, could know they would be in a spot? Like, I think fans sometimes think, oh, so you throw the football around. Quarterback, receiver, that is a relationship. Yeah. How long does it take to build?
Yeah, and to further that point, I think a little bit, Colin, you're not going to Clemson where you've got like four plays, right? And you run two formations and you're up tempo. You're going in Green Bay to probably the most complex offense in the NFL, to probably the most demanding quarterback when it comes to that precision and timing you're talking about. You know, what they have done, I had them twice earlier this year, and the amount of time they spent this offseason, Colin, trying to eliminate vowels in their call. Right. So they can make that call in enough time from head coach to quarterback in the huddle and still get to the line of scrimmage and do all their check with me. So it is a very complex system, too. Now, I will say this. You're not going there to be the savior. You're not going there to be the one. Davante Adams is the one. So you're going there to be the two, or for Zach Ertz, you're going there to really compliment Mercedes Lewis, the tight end. So you're not going there having to just be the one to hit number four in the lineup. You're going there to hit five or six in the lineup. And also, if they make that move, I think Aaron Rodgers would be a little bit more patient than he would be with some of the young players they've tried to develop. You know, that Alan Lazard injury was a big one because he was coming. Aaron was really liking him. He was confident that he could be there too. So I think it would be a challenge. It'd be very difficult to any young player that does not have a depth of football background. But an Amari Cooper, a Zach Ertz, have played in systems, played in multiple systems. They could do it, but I guarantee you that quarterback will be pretty demanding of exactly where they need to be.
6 years in the NFL. He's calling NFL games for us, called the Falcons Lions last week. We know the teams that need a quarterback, and we know the teams that have a great quarterback. Atlanta's fascinating. You start looking at Matt Ryan, he's older. I do believe as the game changes, you can't move him around much in the pocket. He's good enough for some. I don't know if the new coach and GM in Atlanta, and you just watched his game, is Matt Ryan somebody a new coach should say, all right, I'll take 4 years of Matt Ryan, or is it time to draft the Justin Fields, develop for a year, and move on? What do you see?
Yeah, 4 years, that's not going to happen. Now, 2 years is a different conversation. And Colin, his finances of his contract are going to make it very difficult on whoever that next GM or head coach is to say, trade him, move him, cut him. That's going to be financially so irresponsible. So more than likely, you're going to have him for 2 years. And I think 2 years in the right system, you know, with the right supporting cast, they've done some good things on offense. But as I mentioned to you earlier, they were the second worst defense only to the Seahawks. Can't rush the passer, not taking the ball away. Some challenges on that side. So you're going to have Matt Ryan, whoever that GM or head coach, in my opinion, you're going to have Matt Ryan for the next couple of years because that contract is just so financially difficult to move if you wanted to move off of him.
Do you think there's a market for Cam Newton? I did after the Seattle game. Then I came to terms with, oh, wait, everybody scores on Seattle. And then I looked this morning and I'm like, if I get two more bad showings, and it's not all Cam's fault, it's the slowest receiving core in the league, I wonder what the market is for Cam. What say you?
Yeah, it depends, Colin, on what kind of tape he continues to put forward throwing the football. What they did the first couple weeks was awesome. The league hadn't really seen it, didn't make many adjustments to it. He's running all over Miami. He's running all over Seattle. But we know that's not sustainable, especially a player at his age and his wear and tear on those tires. So can he throw the ball effectively enough? The last couple weeks, that's been a definitive no. That's coming off no practice time. That's coming off, as you said, a beat-up receiver crew. Edelman is just Band-Aids right now. So it's going to be a challenging environment for him. But it will, to me, Colin, be all about how efficient, how accurate can he anticipate. I'm not seeing that. I haven't seen that the last couple weeks. You're going to give him a grace period. It's all new. There's less practice. There's not immense talent outside. but it will ultimately come down to how well he can throw it. And more than likely, Colin, how much Bill Belichick believes in him, because they don't have another answer. They're not going to draft one or two. They're not going to get Trevor or Justin. So it really comes down to, I think, how much does Bill believe in him to extend him long term?
6 years in the NFL, a Fox NFL analyst, does a tremendous job. Brock Huard, love having you on the show, man. Thanks for coming by.